Okay, welcome to the second session this afternoon. Joy McDonough is going to be speaking to us on aerial properties of tone in McKinsey, Basin, Dene, or Athabascan languages.
This feels very... The actual title of this talk, if you look at your handout, is the aerial properties of tone in Athabascan. But I'm going to step back a bit and talk about the structure of the Dene Speech Atlas for a couple of reasons. And one is that, in fact, we're still working on the database for the tone in the Dene McKenzie River Basin. So that's not ready for us yet. And second, because I think a lot of questions have come up about the putting together online resources. And it's an interesting problem, and I'd like to talk about it. So I'm going to talk about what this is and how it's organized and what the issues are with it. Yesterday, in her NSF talk, Birgit Hellwig made this observation that the central aim of language documentation is the slides are a mess. I don't know where the help is. The central aim of language documentation is the comprehensive documentation of the speech stream. Here I have a quote here. The comprehensive is to comprehensively document the speech practices of a community. To comprehensively document the speech practices of a community. And that is, in fact, what the DSA is trying to do. We're trying to collect and present systematic speech data on the Dene languages with the goal of presenting it in as transparent and straightforward a manner as possible for the use of people who are interested in also all the aspects of language documentation and conservation that we have been talking about. And the overarching goal of the project is to build a database of information about the speech patterns that can be built on. This project focuses on the Dene languages in the McKenzie Basin. This is the McKenzie Basin here. We take this very loosely. We're not exclusive. And this area covers a large swath of northern North America, Northwest Territories, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, some parts of the Yukon. These are a closely related set of languages. They are spoken in small communities. They've always been spoken in small communities. They're isolated. They're inaccessible. They're in roadless areas. The languages are complex, morphologically complex. They are paradigmatic. They have lots of inflections, subject marking, agreement marking. These languages that are in this area and the ones that are in the American Southwest belong to a branch of the Dene languages that are tone languages. For the most part, the tones are high and low tones, and they have very unique properties. These languages have quite unique properties. So the objective of the project is to provide a systematic account and the description of the phoneme contrast, starting with the phoneme contrasts, and the prosodic structure, a baseline description of the prosodic structure of these Dene-speaking language communities, community by community. Many indigenous languages throughout the world do not have this level of documentation. Among the Dene group, with the notable exception of Pliny Earl Goddard, who went up to Cold Lake in 1905 with a chymograph, not going to bother you with what a chymograph is, was a big old glass cylinder on a mule, and made chymographic recordings. And from that time till about the mid-80s, there had been almost no phonetic documentation of these languages. This is data that's available for better studied languages. Systematic, we know that. This is what happens when you plug a Mac in after a PC. Um, just in case you wanted to know, it's 25 degrees in Rochester. There we are. This is information that's available for better studied languages like English. It's not recoverable from texts. I mean, that seems like a trivial thing to say, but it's not a trivial thing to say. It needs to be done while there are speakers who are around. It needs to be done systematically. And it's not recoverable from connected speech, from narratives and language corpora. And we know this from English. It's already very, very difficult to transcribe and annotate connected speech in English. How much more difficult is it to do in a language where we don't have baseline information about it? In the Atlas, what we're trying to do, because these are isolated communities, is to document the community's speech community by community. For the greater part, the data in this speech atlas was collected at the University of Alberta's SILDI program under the aegis of Sally Rice and Jordan Lackla, who are training speakers, fluent speakers, in language documentation and conservation practices. And it is the existence of organizations like SILDI, especially in this case, make it possible on two levels. First place, it allows linguists and phoneticians, in my case, to work with native fluent speakers who are themselves trained linguists. And the second and important aspect of this is that in this case, it is a gathering point for the Dene people. This data wouldn't have been able to be collected without this organization, because people from all over the area had come to Alberta, to the university in the summer for 3 weeks, and that's how the data got collected. It would have been impossible to go to the separate communities, very expensive. The Dene Speech Atlas has two parts. It has the website, and I'll demonstrate both of these parts, which has information on the four or five language groups in that area and documentation of the individual speech communities that we have. And then it also has a Google Earth interface. And that was put together with tools provided by Google Earth. And for anyone, probably all of us, who have played with Google Earth, it's a wonderful tool. And it's being broadly used. The documentation of this site and these communities is ongoing, and what we're hoping to produce is something that we will be able to build on, and that will last for a long time. And that puts some kinds of constraints on the kinds of databases that we are building that sit behind this. So our Google Earth interface, and I'm going to try this, and I don't think I can. Yes. Our Google Earth interface is here. And what we have done is produced delineated the Dene speaking languages in this area in Google Earth. There are a number of these kinds of interfaces that exist, including ones by the Dobis Project in this area, and the Endangered Languages Project, which is put out by the Rosetta people. In this interface, we have an introduction, and all of the, this one has three links, but all of our other interfaces, these balloons, have two links. One is to a site, and you can see down here it says Cold Lake First Nations. One of these is to a site that has recently come up on the Canadian by the Canadian government, and that's the Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Canada site. And this site here, which itself has a Google Earth interface listing all of the Aboriginal communities in Canada, has this wealth of information about the communities. And one of the links on each one of our Dene Speech Atlas balloons links to this site and links a community. Here we have the Cold Lake, a Fort Good Hope community, to its site on Lake on the Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Canada site. And as you can see, there's just a wonderful source of information. What's interesting about this site, as you can see all of these balloons, is the language. The language site, and here is the information about the language site. So for all of the communities throughout Canada, the languages are listed as Aboriginal languages. The stats are impressive, and disclaimer about what they're trying to do is impressive. For them, it's also an ongoing process. This just came up online 3 weeks ago. But they have not identified what the languages in these individual communities actually are. This is their site for the indigenous communities. This is a huge area of North America, the indigenous communities in the Northwest Territories. And on the right is a list of those communities. A lot of them are Dene-speaking communities. We've transferred those communities over to our website. So here is our website. Right now, this website is on our development server. It's not Googleable, and it's because parts of this won't be Googleable. And we're in the process of removing those parts from search engines. The languages spoken, there are four groups of languages spoken in this area. The Slavey languages, North and South, Dogrib or Tlingcho, Dene Suthene, used to be called Chipewyan, and Tsutina, or used to be called Sarsi. So all of the communities are linked to one of these groups on this atlas. In some communities, there are more than one group of speakers in the community. For some of these languages, and we have a source of all sort of resources on here, family relationships, language maps, language materials, and the like for these communities. We have orthography is a big issue with the communities, so we have a statement about orthographies and about our orthography practices are on this. And one of the things that we're making clear is that we are taking no stance on what the official orthography is for a given community, but we have to use one. So all of the languages in the speech atlas are linked to one of these language groups. However, there are a number of languages. We have about 12 communities right now where we have this more fuller documentation of the sound files. Let's take a look at that. So here is the Dene Suthene group. Actually, the North Slavey has a better interface at this point. So here's the North Slavey. These are the North Slavey communities in the Northwest Territories. That's where this language is spoken. And what we find at the bottom is the Dene is a community for which we have further documentation. The site that goes online, you will not be able to get onto their further documentation, that is the actual speech sounds, unless you write to us and ask for that document and ask for that access. Until we have full approval for all of the people who are on this site. So what is on these sites? So if we take Dene Suthene, we have Cold Lake Dene Suthene, we have things about the orthography, we have the consonant sounds, we have a list of all of the consonant sounds, a very rich consonant inventory, and we have examples of the speech in that particular, for every phoneme in these in these communities, we have put together phonemic inventories and produced these files. So what you see is the waveform, the spectrogram with a pitch trace, and the sound file. A description of the sound, an esufene, cold lake, phoneme D, the IPA symbol, it's an alveolar, a voiced alveolar plosive, on the word, the transcription, on the speaker, and a description. It's a D in initial position in a word, and the voicing bar is visible throughout that whole, sound. This is a very strongly voiced stop, and that's actually quite unusual. You contrast this, for instance, with North Slavey in Delaunay, the D in that language, and here is an example. In this language, the phoneme D is a voiceless stop. So it's a voiceless alveolar plosive. Here's the word, here's the pronunciation. Okay, so for English speakers, this sounds like a D, because in English, the D is also not a voiced stop, but a voiceless alveolar plosive, as it is. And you can see clearly here in initial position and in medial position, it's completely voiceless, it's unaspirated. The vowel begins directly after the release of the stop. And you can see the pitch trace. This is a high tone. The other thing that you can recover from these sound files and these demonstrations is something that is present in all of the Dene languages that we have looked at, and that is that this is the stem. Very, very long. If you compare this, it's a CV syllable, if you compare this CV syllable to this one, you'll have an idea of the difference between the stem morphemes and the pre-stem morphemes. And this right here, this position right here, in the onset of the stem, is the only position where the full set of consonantal contrasts occur. So the asymmetries in this language are showing up in the way that the language is actually realized. So, while I'm in here, let me also talk about a minute about the vowel sounds. Is it up there? I don't even want to look. There it is. Okay, so I put these all in here. This is an example how do we get this information up online, and how do we organize the information? And this is one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, is the amount of work that goes into the meta documentation of these. We collect the sound files. We got the sound files by working with speakers. There's three kinds of sound files, word list sound files that we collect. One is for the phonemic inventory. One is for a Dene comparative lexicon that Sally Rice is interested in. And one of them is a tone word list that we have been working on. We give speakers these word lists. We have them practice or give us the items that we want on the word list, and then we record them saying each word three times. So these are classic word list recitations. So then we have the sound files. Those sound files have to be brought to this is all done at the University of Rochester. They're annotated, they're transcribed, they're annotated. And then they have to be cut up, and they have to be processed into a database that will allow us to link these files onto the website and to keep track of them. What we are using in here is the simplest form possible. These are spreadsheets. They are not relational databases. They're individual spreadsheets. And they're set up so each time we do a reorganization, we have a new spreadsheet. And as you know, Excel spreadsheets can be easily transferred into text files. So these online resources are wonderful, but they are fragile, and they're constantly changing and constantly in change. Links break, so on and so forth. So we're losing a lot when we're transferring our data to this kind of to this kind of presentation, to this kind of media, and it's something to keep in mind. So I'm 20 minutes. So one thing I wanted to show here is this is a vowel space. I will go through. Is something is the toy game. This is a game that was put together by Jordan Lackler and I that gives us baseline information about prosody. We put two speakers in front of a piece of paper with three shapes and a bunch of toys. That's why it's called a toy game. They cannot see each other, and their task is to build identical boards between them. The speakers really enjoy this game. It takes them off of the task of speaking. They get into the task. They laugh, they joke, they ask questions of each other, clarification questions, yes, no questions. They talk about directions. They talk about orientation. They talk about in, under, around. So far, we've done this in four communities, and all of the people that we've done this with have been teachers, and they have all really loved this task. The big deal with this is getting it transcribed, and we have been asking speakers to transcribe us to transcribe this for us, and this is also up on the website. So, in summary, our goals have been to create a resource and to keep developing the resource to provide comprehensive documentation of the speech patterns. To develop methodologies that allow us to do this, and all of our protocols are on the website, and to link First Nations people to their linguistic heritage and support language documentation conservation efforts and to build partnerships. We hope to expand the number of communities that are participating in this more careful careful collection and presentation of the data. I also want to point out Deirdre Black, who has been a tremendous support for me in the development of this website and is making it look very professional. That's her job. She has a PhD in linguistics and has been working and in library science and has been working with indigenous communities for about 20 years. She's been great. And here are some of the names of some of the people who have been working with us and funding. So thank you.
Although I think your presentation was absolutely tremendous and your spectrograms really clean and the coatings and stuff like that, fantastic. I really wanted to hear what you were going to talk about. Purported.
We're still working on it.
Can I ask you a question about it, though?
Please.
So acid acid is one place you have so-called tonogenesis, and I wonder if there's any interplay with tonogenesis and aerial phenomena.
So you're talking to a phonetician. One of the issues with tonogenesis is that the laryngealization that happened in the incorporation, when the loss of laryngealized consonants, those are the languages that develop tone. Lose the laryngealized consonants, get tone. Those are completely different processes. So first there's the laryngealization, which is a gradient property. You have to go from that to a contrastive property. The thing about tone that is different than gradient properties is this pitch range and pitch alignment. Those are the two things that are proper to tone languages. So we're looking across the languages to see, first if Mike Krause, so what we've done with this is that we have a list of Mike Krause's lexical items for all of these languages, and we've asked speakers, can you say this word? And we just record them. And then we'll take each word and we'll geotag it to the community that they're in. And then we'll be able to look across and see how accurate or inaccurate or whatever, what the differences are between the predicted tonogenesis and this. And then the other weird thing about the tonogenesis is this tonal reversal. But what doesn't get, what you don't hear about with this tonal reversal is this asymmetry in the distribution of contrast in these Athabaskan groups anyway. So there's a lot of factors, and that's a fabulous, and I'm not slighting that work at all that Krauss has done. It's a fabulous start, but we need to go beyond that and look at what exactly is going on in these languages that allows this continual reversal to happen and how these languages work in that. But we're still working with the database. This is an enormous amount of work. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering why, how you chose the Mackenzie Basin area. Was that, because it's an area that has certain characteristics, or is that considered to be a subdivision of the Dene or Athabaskan language family? Because I noticed there are certainly dialects of Dene, so Dene spoken in Manitoba are very, very much outside of the Mackenzie Basin.
Yeah, well.
So what is the rationale, basically?
For calling it the Mackenzie Basin, because that was the original goal, but then, I mean, the original sort of area, but it's expanded beyond the Mackenzie Basin. We're in Manitoba, we have speakers from Lac Rocher, and the reason for choosing that area is Sally Rice. I don't know if she's here. She had started the Sildi Institute, and we started talking, and she was like, you know, it would be really interesting to have this kind of data and to develop this sort of, she wanted to look at the way that when you're looking at across Athabaskan, you're dependent on text, and she wanted a more precise. So we're working on that. These comparative databases, which the tone databases also, are really tricky, and we're still working on it. Oh, there she is.
I just want to add to Hilma's comment, because I've heard twice this week that language documentation is opportunistic. It totally is. And, you know, Sildi draws from prairie provinces in the Northwest Territories, and an opportunity knocks when answers. I think in Joyce's case, there was a large density of diverse Dene speech communities, and I think it's the plan is to move through the rest of the Dene world as much as possible.
As much as possible. I mean, that would be great. And I want to set this up and put the protocols up there so that it can be done independently. I would also at some point like to turn this over to someone. Yeah. I mean, these are fragile. We don't think of it that way, but these are fragile. This has been redone twice in three years. This was just recently redone because links break and the like. But you all know that. Oh, there's Jordan. I have the light in my eyes. I can't see it.
Other questions?
You said you were getting people to read word lists.
Yes, not to read them. I don't like people reading. They recite them. There
so
is a difference.
How do they know what to say? I was going to question the literacy in their language, but then do they repeat after you then? And how do you get them to say it if they're not reading?
Jordan, have we ever recorded anyone who couldn't read?
Yeah. I've been working with Navajos. A lot of them claim that they don't read or write Navajo. Even though they read and write English, and they can say Navajo, and I don't really know what it means when they claim they can't write.
Yeah.
But that's what they say. Oh.
Well, I mean, you know, what is literacy in a language in which the only literate things are linguistic documents? I mean, it's not real literacy. But for the most part, the speakers we're working with are people who have been to Sildi. So they're reading and writing, and they're learning orthographies. They're learning the IPA. They're learning about how the verb is put together. They're learning about the structure of the lexicon. So these are sophisticated. Educators. A lot of these people are educators. That's the people we've been working with. I don't imagine. I mean, when I was working on the Navajo reservation, I worked with monolinguals, and you know, you just. What I did in that case is I had a recording and I had someone repeat a word and then they repeated it. Yeah.
questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.